Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. I would like now to welcome Craig Smith. He is Pasatiempo staff writer, arts and culture critic, and musician, and he is here with us today, Christmas Eve, speaking of Christmas carols.
That's right, Mary Charlotte. It's a nice, crisp morning to talk about carols.
Crisp indeed. Colder than...
Yes, well, not to make anyone feel bad, but my father used to say colder than a blonde's heart.
Oh, no.
And since I have light hair, I figure that's safe enough.
Good heavens. Well, Christmas carols have been with us for a very long time, and you have been kind enough to make a compilation, which is on disc, and the wonderful Mary Lynn is going to play some of these discs, and some of these songs, and we're going to talk about them. But Christmas carols have been around almost as long as Christ.
Well, they have, and they actually have an earlier kind of origin, because as with many things the Christian church did in the early years, it took over pagan traditions. There were songs and ceremonies and dances performed at the winter solstice, very joyful ones usually, because it marked when the sun would begin to return. And the church naturally began to put its own sacred traditions onto those to attract the pagans into the church. I just saw something on CNN that the site of an ancient basilica in Rome appears to be right above a Lupercalia, which is the cave temple to Romulus and Remus. So you've got that kind of thing going.
Right. So what is the earliest Christmas carol that you've chosen to play for us?
Well, carols apparently originated around 100 A.D., but the one I chose that was the earliest is the Coventry Carol. It comes from 16th century England. The earliest text we have is 1534, and the earliest printed music is 1591. It was sung in a mystery play, The Pageant of the Shearmen and Tailors. As you probably know, mystery plays were used to help instruct the populace in the simple truths of the faith and to remind them what was happening and why they would have certain observances. This particular carol is about the massacre of the Holy Innocents, when Herod, hearing from the three wise men that a king of the Jews had been born, decided that all male children 1 year old and younger would be slaughtered. And this performance is by the Trinity Choir Boston, directed by Brian Jones on the Dorian label.
Let's hear it.
Jesus.
And that was incredibly beautiful, Craig Smith.
It is a lovely carol. Very, very beautiful, very sad. It's been sung by many different kinds of groups and soloists. One of the things that I find especially interesting about it is how simply it works and yet how beautifully. And of course, as I'm sure our listeners know, even though there are many popular holiday songs and Christmas songs out there today that we'll talk about, a true carol in this sense has to deal with the Christian tradition and the birth of Christ. It's very difficult to separate that from the concept of a carol.
Now, the carols were always, I mean, these mystery plays and carols and things that were to bring people into the faith and so on, were they always sung in the popular language versus in Latin?
That's a good point. Yes, they were. The actual church service would be performed in Latin, and of course there would be sacred music, Gregorian chant and so forth, or Latin hymns that were sung in Latin. But these songs, because of their popular survival in a way, were always sung in the vernacular. I should point out when we talk about carol, too, carol means anything that's a celebratory kind of thing. There's something about caroling larks and so forth. So a carol could actually be an Easter song or a harvest song. But in our civilization and commentary, it usually means something at Christmas.
The next song is called "The Holly and the Ivy," and those are symbols. Certainly, holly is an old Christmas symbol.
Mm-hmm, it is, and one of the sources I was checking on reminded me, if I had ever known, that holly, ivy, and mistletoe were druidic traditions in Celtic Britain, and old men in long white robes with beards would take their sacred sickles and cut mistletoe because it was extremely important to the druids, and this carol apparently morphed into a popular song to be sung when people were decorating the church for Christmas. And for example, the holly and the ivy, when they are both full grown, of all the trees that are in the wood, the holly bears the crown. And it goes on, the holly bears a blossom as white as lily flower, and Mary bore sweet Jesus Christ to be our sweet Savior. So it's a storytelling as well as the rest of it.
Well, let's hear this one. And that's a very familiar
yes.
tune. I mean, one of the things is they're covered in so many different styles.
They absolutely are. You'll hear this kind of carol as elevator music.
Yep.
You'll hear it in Walmart. You'll hear it in a church such as here, Trinity Church in Boston, Brian Jones conducting the choir. And it's really become ubiquitous. People who don't think of themselves as Christmas religious types nonetheless relate to this music. I personally regard it something as the collective unconscious of music. It begins to get to you when you're little and you hear it and you begin to react to it.
And people who, I mean, I've seen this, people who have dementia or Alzheimer's disease and really can barely communicate anymore, this music still speaks to them, especially Christmas music or holiday music.
Exactly, the same way something, for example, an animal or a puppy could. It bypasses the conscious part of the brain and really does tap into us in music. As we know, music has an extremely powerful influence on the unconscious. And it's true that a nice, peppy, happy Christmas song can make you happier if you're willing to let it.
And you chose your favorites. This is one of the things that makes me happy about this show, because we were talking about which songs to play, and I just said, play your favorite carols.
Well, it began to be difficult because we'd have to have an eight-hour show. So well, many different things.
Next time.
So I did pick a number of things that are dear to me and ones that are favorites, and also ones that I thought were important for other reasons, just to give a different look at Christmas.
Go Tell It on the Mountain being the next song that we're going to hear.
Mm-hmm. an African-American spiritual. The earliest reference is about 1865. As we know, many of the spirituals were subtle protest songs. Tell old Pharaoh to let my people go. Go down, Moses. So they were actually, you might say, subversive at the same time. This is quite a joyful song. It's sung by the African-American sextet Take Six, a male sextet, and you'll hear them in the beginning do a rappy kind of thing about how when it's Christmas in Alabama or wherever, there isn't any snow on the ground, but Grandma still sings this song.
And it's an amazing version of this song. It's not your traditional church
version. This isn't your stand and hold your hands in front of your bosom, no. This one's pretty wild.
I think you have to clap your hands or something.
Clap and jump.
Let's hear it.
You know, in some places, there's no such thing as a white Christmas. In fact, in the South, it might get pretty hot. Now the whole family might gather right on the front porch just to hear Grandma tell a Christmas story. She might have said something like this. Say, go tell it on the mountain.
Is amazing.
Aren't they great? It's interesting. I happen to pick quite a bit of male chorus music, mainly because I like it, and also because going through my library at a rapid pace, this is what I found. Six men singing from soprano down to deep bass. A little later on, they add in "While Shepherds Watch Their Flocks by Night" in a very beat arrangement. It's amazing music. It you can hear the popular where popular music went, Motown and so forth. That kind of easy, relaxed harmony, that beat that never stops, even though it's easy going, you know, and great confidence in the singing, and also much introspection, which I think is characteristic of the best kind of performance of spirituals. I think that any good singer can sing a spiritual effectively, but it's true when you come from that tradition and maybe you've heard them from members of the family when you're growing up, like we talked about with Christmas influencing you, music influencing you, you can do it even better.
We're talking to Craig Smith about Christmas music. The next song, "O Holy Night," Back to the religious.
And this one, I'll tell you, this one is more than ubiquitous. I remember years ago when I was in graduate school in Kansas City, Missouri, I was the organist and choir director for a Midtown church. And one year, the volunteer choir threatened to go on strike if I didn't let them sing "O Holy Night." And so I said,
"What, you didn't want to let them sing 'O Holy Night'?"
We had so much other music. Of course, I wanted to do something nice and medieval, like two-part chant, and they wanted "O Holy Night." And I thought, all right, it's worship, let them. Unfortunately, we had some sopranos who thought they were sopranos, but they really weren't. But it was a very moving experience, nonetheless. This "O Holy Night," it was by Adolphe Adam, 1847. The original French words translate as, "It's midnight, Christians, it's the hour so solemn," and it goes on about the birth of Christ. This is from the Let It Snow album by Chanticleer, the male chorus based in San Francisco on the Warner label. The soloist in the first part is Matt Altman, who sang with the Desert Chorale for several seasons. And you'll hear the vocal arrangement by Joseph Jennings takes the male voices and turns them into an orchestra, which I think you'll find very interesting.
Let's hear it, O Holy Night.
Bright Portals of the Sky.
That one's next.
Yes, I chose this one because it's from a a Christmas work not many people know. People know Bach's Christmas Oratorio. People know the Christmas portion of Handel's Messiah. People know Berlioz's L'Enfance du Christ, The Childhood of Christ. Vaughan Williams wrote this piece a few years before he died at 85 in 1958. His then-fiancée, Ursula Wood, put together a variety of poems. Some she wrote herself, some she gathered. And it's very typically Vaughan Williams. Brilliant music, brilliant orchestration, very predictable harmonic patterns, and very reassuring in that sense. This first selection is Bright Portals of the Sky, which is... yes, the poem is by William Drummond. We'll hear part of that, and you'll hear the characteristic Vaughan Williams glitter in the sound.
Let's hear it. And that's a Christmas song I've never heard.
No, you're not going to hear it much. As I said, this piece, Hodier by Vaughan Williams, is not often done, which I think is too bad. It's such a nice change from the Eternal Messiah, nice as that piece is. The sentiments are wonderful, and it actually plays out very nicely. You have big, fast numbers. You have huge choral numbers. You have organ accompaniment with choir boys intoning a story. And then we have a very beautiful, simple, unaccompanied motet, No Sad Thought, His Soul Affright.
Also Vaughan Williams.
Also Vaughan Williams, and I just thought it might be interesting to hear the contrast and also to think of this kind of hushed, reverent music as typical of a certain kind of carol.
Let's hear. And that is very sweet. Again, not so well-known music.
Not well-known. This is an EMI recording with Richard Hickox conducting large forces, including the choristers of St. Paul's Cathedral. I would encourage any professional musicians, choir directors, singers, pianists, organists to investigate things like Vaughan Williams' music more. There are many other American composers, too, who have done unusual, beautiful music. And if you, speaking as a former organist and choir director, if you just slip up something unfamiliar in year by year, pretty soon people begin to accept it and enjoy it and find real relevance in it. And then you don't always have to do the chestnuts, which, much as I adore, are often roasting on an open artistic fire, and they get a little burnt.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yes.
It's I think it's important to think about the fact that although Christmas music, I mean, and Christmas is officially the celebration of the birth of Christ for people who are religious, many people who celebrate Christmas are enjoying family's company.
Correct.
Giving and receiving gifts, finding an excuse to sing and make a nice meal, getting a little bit of time off from work.
Yes. In that sense, it's actually, we've come full around, and it's a reflection of the winter solstice pagan celebrations.
Indeed.
There's a good feeling, but it's not so precisely religious. People accept it as a time of change, a new time, a time to turn over a new leaf, perhaps, along with the new year. And you certainly get that kind of popularity with things like the next song, which is White Christmas. Now, I did some
check. Sung by Robert Knott.
Oh, he's not here yet,
oh,
fortunately.
Oh, Bing Crosby then.
Bing Crosby, yes. I think that's a better idea. Mr. Crosby is a good idea. Now, this comes from a film called Holiday Inn. And what's interesting about this is it's become the quintessential, I think, holiday song that has nothing to do with anything. 1942 movie. Later it was featured in a similar film called White Christmas, and it's all about how in Beverly Hills, L.A., there's no snow. So this man's dreaming of a white Christmas. And before we hear it, I should mention that popular Christmas songs that have nothing to do with the religious aspect, the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers in 2006 listed the most popular, in quotation marks, Christmas songs. White Christmas is number 5. The top were the Christmas song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, then Santa Claus is Coming to Town, then Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which we'll hear later, then Winter Wonderland, then White Christmas, and then we go on to Let It Snow, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Jingle Bell Rock, which I still run in circles screaming about when I think about.
We're second only to the dog barking jingle bells.
Well, there's Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget them. And Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, although she's not on this list. And Little Drummer Boy is the 10th.
So none of those songs really have that much to do with the birth of our Savior.
No, they have nothing to do with the religious aspect. They have more to do with the celebration aspect of the holidays. And in that sense, they're a lot of fun, they're beautiful, and frankly, to my mind, someone like Irving Berlin and Hugh Martin were just as great a composer in their way as a Vaughan Williams or a Bach, because music is for a purpose. And if you fit that purpose tightly, you've made wonderful things happen.
Well, let's hear White Christmas.
Where the tree tops
Smith, you were giggling in the middle of that.
I was, because it's quintessential Hollywood music. It sounds so much like the Disney films of the same period. You've got the same kind of orchestration. You've got the female and male chorus in the background. You can hear them going back and forth, you know, swaying and so forth, and Bing Crosby, who I admit was a great singer in his own way. Unfortunately, Bing caused a lot of bad things to happen in music, because singing May All Your Christmases Be White and With Every Christmas Card I Write, all that consonant and semi-vowel stuff has become a curse. And with him, it was wonderful.
Very interesting. It also, I mean, this song and the list that you read a few minutes ago really points to the fact that many of the songs that we sing and that we know are 20th century songs. I don't know how cut off we are from, you know, the 19 centuries before that.
Well, in a sense, we are, because popular music as Christmas, with Christmas emphasis in a secular way, really is a product of the 20th century. Santa Claus in his incarnation as Santa Claus, or as Woden, or as other earth figures, is centuries old. But the concept of Christmas becoming a secular holiday, for my mind, really does come from the 30s, 40s, 50s especially, and then on down. That's where many of these songs come from.
And the inevitable relationship to commercialism.
Well, that's true. People run through the streets to the sound of sleigh bells and music and muzak. One thing we don't have now is sound trucks going through the city blaring Christmas carols. Instead, we have our iPods
right. And
our radios and so forth.
So the next song is Holiday Cheer.
Yes, this is a medley by Chanticleer.
And medleys.
I hope this one comes up. And this is the popular side of Chanticleer. It's quite enchanting, actually, if I may say so. And just give it a listen and see what you think.
Okay. The cheese factory to get that one.
I did indeed. We made it. We pressed it. We saw the holes come. It was great. But this, think how much this is like White Christmas.
It is
indeed. It's full of the little bells. It's full of the rhythm changes. It's meant to evoke a feeling. And this is from the Chanticleer album, Let It Snow, on Warner Classics. Just came out. You see, we had Jingle Bells. We had Deck the Halls. We even had a snip from the Hallelujah Chorus. And then they end up with some big giant percussion.
All in one giant fruitcake.
In 3.51 minute impression. I should mention that.
I have to say, medleys fill me with a feeling that's not necessarily holiday cheer.
No, I understand. It's you can't quite keep up. It's like fruitcake.
You don't know
if you're going to get a bit of candied cherry or break your
molars.
Tooth on a nut. You're so right. I should mention there are a lot of non-Christmas songs associated with the season now. I was thinking of Baby, It's Cold Outside by Frank Lesser, The Bells of St. Mary from that. Wasn't Bing Crosby in that movie? Feed the Birds from Mary Poppins. The Hallelujah Chorus from Handel's Messiah, because it actually occurs in the oratorio at the end of the Easter section. I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm by Irving Berlin. Jingle Bells actually comes from around 1857.
Is that right?
And of course, it has nothing to do with Christmas. It's all about dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, which is colder than the devil. And then, of course, the Linus and Lucy theme, Charlie Brown Christmas and White Christmas and Happy Holiday.
And the Who's Down in Whoville.
Oh, I forgot the Who's Down
the
in
small.
Whoville. Yes, yes.
I just downloaded that the other day for
Did
my
you?
Own listening pleasure. It's
for
not, it's not on the show today.
Pressure. Good for you.
So, Holiday Cheer was what we were listening to. Tomorrow Shall Be My Dancing Day.
Yes, I wanted to go back to an old, old carol from England. This, again, is sung by the Trinity Choir and Brian Jones on Dorian. It's a very old song that is an explication of the entire story of Christ. The concept is, tomorrow shall be my dancing day. I would my true love did so chance to see the legend of my play, to call my true love to my dance. In effect, it's the risen Christ calling everyone to come to be redeemed and to share heavenly joy with him. And the different verses actually go from Christmas through growing up, through passion, through death, through resurrection. And everyone will recognize the tune, I think.
Let's hear it. Craig Smith, we're supposed to know that song?
Not necessarily, but I hope you'll know it now.
We know it
because
now.
Because it's certainly something to wake you up and make you say, hey. It dates a long way back. It dates back into the 14 and 1500s again. So it's not a 19th century carol such as everybody knows, like O Little Town of Bethlehem or Silent Night.
Interesting rhythm
Joy
to that
the
one.
World. Yes, yes. Angels from the Realms of Glory, Angels We Have Heard on High. Those are ones that come from traditions all over, I'd say, Europe and America, originally in different languages. Stille Nacht, Gruber and Schubert's carol, for example.
Stille Nacht is, and we're going to hear a German Christmas carol at the end, actually.
Yes, yes.
In honor of my German heritage
German
and my
roots.
Dear mother.
That's correct. That's correct.
But, I mean, that brings up the question of, were a lot of these Christmas songs translated into multiple languages? It sounds like it.
Oh, often, yes. Yes, you'll still hear certain carols sung in French, of course, for example, whereas we would be saying, where is Gloria, Gloria, in excelsis Deo? Of course, that's Latin, but you follow me.
Right.
The same kind of idea there. Because there is a strong tradition all the way. Contemporary carols have supplanted many of these, and yet at this time of year, people want to go back to the old familiar things. It's a safe thing and a very beautiful thing.
Now, the next song is God is With Us.
Yes, this is by the contemporary British composer John Taverner. He is a member of the Greek Orthodox Church. He goes to that tradition a great deal for inspiration, and it's an unusual piece. We won't hear the whole thing. It does go on a bit, and yet it's extremely powerful, and you'll hear the intoning aspect of Greek Orthodox music and Russian Orthodox music, as well as a more Western kind of choral writing. He's an extremely good composer, and one I would encourage anyone to listen to. This particular recording, again, is on Dorian, the Trinity Church Choir, with Brian Jones, the conductor.
Let's hear it.
Oh.
God is with us.
Yes.
And if you're not sure, listen to that organ part.
Listen to that organ part. Yes, I wanted to bring a piece like this in because it's an example of the kind of music that not everyone in the general populace will know because it's service music and they won't hear it unless it happens to be done in their church or they happen to buy an album like this. But it's the idea that Christmas music still keeps going. Popular, sacred. People are writing it all the time, and they're writing it from motives that do them great credit. Religious ecstasy, fervent feelings, or just plain, it's a good time of year. And the next one really is. This is the quintessential Christmas song, I think.
Yeah, this is a contrast to the one we just heard.
It sure is.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
From that great movie, Meet Me in St. Louis. I've been reading about that, and apparently the original words were real downers, and it was insisted that they be rewritten. This recording comes from Hugh Sings Martin on PS Classics, and this little snippet was recorded a few years ago by the nonagenarian 90-some-year-old Hugh Martin, the composer, and I think it's charming.
Let's hear it.
Golden days of yore. Faithful friends who were dear to us gather near to us once
sang that when he's in his 90s?
Yeah, he's still alive.
Amazing.
I know a lot of 25-year-old pianists who should play so good now, let me tell you.
That's incredible. I've sung that song to my dog with the words, have yourself another plate of dog food.
Oh, I like that. That's charming. Maybe we could do chicken soup for the dog like Christmas.
And we're being joined by Robert Knott. Welcome, Robert. Merry Christmas.
That was Judy Garland who insisted that they rewrite the song because the lyrics were so dark.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she told Hugh Martin, this is too downbeat. Make it seem hopeful.
Well, we have two more songs left, and one of them, the first one is Alle Jahre Wieder, and this is in honor of my mother, so let's just hear a little bit of it, because we were talking last night about what Christmas carols were closest to her heart, and this was the one.
That's lovely.
It is indeed.
I think the words talk about how many, all these years ago, Christ was born to save mankind.
Something along those lines. And every year he comes back.
Mm-hmm. Very beautiful. Very German.
Well, yeah.
Very gemütlich. Very comfortable.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song, and we're just making a disc of Christmas songs at home to play tomorrow, today and tomorrow. And Christmas is celebrated more on Christmas Eve than Christmas Day in Germany, at least as far as my relatives go. So we're going to end with actually a song from Puerto Rico, Las Campanas de Catedral, Campanas de Catedral. And just to remind ourselves and everybody else that so many Christmas songs are not only in the vernacular language, but in the vernacular rhythms of the places that they go.
Exactly. Everything isn't just 4/4 time in the organ. We get, in America, especially if you grew up in the Midwest or East, I think you begin to get that. So this should be an extremely peppy way to send our listeners out.
Well, Craig Smith, I want to thank you so much for doing this Christmas show with us today.
Thank you.
And I want to wish a Merry Christmas to Robert Knott and all of our listeners. Thanks for coming in, Robert, just to say hello to us.
That's all. It's great to be here. It's a great show.
And to the wonderful staff and volunteers of KSFR. Let's hear Los Hispanos. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Colors of Jazz. And Merry Christmas to everybody. I won't be here tomorrow. The station will be on automation, but we will have shows for the rest of the week, and we'll see you next week. And actually, on New Year's Eve, Robert Knott will be here with us, so it's all good. And have a wonderful holiday, everybody.